The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today my guests on Off the Shelf are Dan Snyder, he's a federal market analyst, and Cameron Luthy, a old friend of the show, who is a senior budget analyst. Both of these gentlemen are from Bloomberg Government, and we're going to talk about the market today. But Dan and Cameron, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Good morning, Roger, and thanks so much for having us.
Well, I'm looking forward to the conversation. We are definitely going to talk about the market as it such as it is or isn't. And there are a fair number of opportunities out there in terms of what's going on. Some major IDIQs are being recompeted right now. It's an interesting time. And it's going to kind of set the framework for the market for probably the next 10 years in some areas like IT. So I know Bloomberg and Dan, you guys did a top 20 opportunities. Can you just give us some of the highlights of that list? And hey, perhaps maybe you could let folks know where they can take a look at it.
Yes, certainly. So the information is included on Bloomberg Government's portal, available at bgov.com. And we now track the top 20 opportunities, which are mainly multiple award contracts, MACs, and strictly focusing on but IT services mainly and professional services. It excludes a lot of the major defense weapons systems because they have a tendency to be single award, and there's not a great deal of competition that takes place among those. So it's derived from an annual top 20 that we began publishing a couple years back. And based off the interest and client engagement that it's been able to generate, we've continued it weekly. So 2016 has certainly seen a great deal of action, and looking forward to talking about it a little bit more today.
Cameron, you have any observations? I mean, it is a kind of action-packed time in IT procurement in particular.
Yeah, and it's important because of the period of performance, because of the scope of work, because of the number of slots on these contracts. If you don't get on some of these contracts, you're in trouble. I mean, these are enormous opportunities that we're talking about. We're talking about vehicles like the Alliant 2 and Alliant Small Business. We're talking about OASIS. We're talking about, you know, big opportunities, and you want to get – that's a slot you want.
Right.
It depends on what your past performance is like, what your service offerings are like, how you're going to be positioned. Are you going to be looking to be a prime? Are you looking to be a sub? Are there things, if it's far enough out, are there things you can do now that could better position your company?
Right. So why don't we go there? Dan, can you give us a little bit of update on, I mean, I know we're, what is it? It's the third quarter of the current fiscal year. And I know there's some big procurements in particular that there's stuff going on with them. Cameron mentioned the two that immediately come to mind, Alliant and OASIS. What's the latest on those?
Yeah, so those are the top two that headline our list of top 20s. And OASIS, I guess, is a little bit more uncertain. We've heard some updates, notably at the Coalition for Government Procurement's conference. This one was last year, not the most recent one. But Tiffany Hickson from GSA noted that there would be on-ramps occurring for those. So that's a certainly unique vehicle in terms of its ability to have on-ramps at GSA's discretion. So we're still leaving that as an open opportunity, as all of these agencies signed the memorandums of understandings. We certainly think it leaves the door open for an on-ramp to occur sooner rather than later. And as we've seen with GSA, who has recently confirmed that the final RFP for Alliant will be coming out in the next month. So, those are
That's right. You reminded me. We're into June. That's right. And GSA has indicated that the RFP should be out this month. That's going to be a huge milestone. I can't even recall, what's the value of that procurement? Just a little bit of.
So we have it listed as number one, and we include it as Alliant 2 and Alliant Small Business. So that combined value is $65 billion. As it's split, the large business portion is 50, with the remainder set aside for small businesses, and those are both ceiling values.
Right. And, from my recollection, some of the draft RFP they're looking at adopting some of the OASIS evaluation methodology. Can you share anything in that regard?
Yes, Cam and I have, I think, and Roger yourself are familiar with the scorecard methodology that has become all too familiar. So certainly we'll see them adopt some of those principles in evaluating the potential bidders on Alliant 2.
Right. Cameron, any thoughts there?
Well, the one thing I throw this out more as a question than a statement, but
I'd be happy to answer it.
Yeah, well, think about how some vehicles, some multiple award IDIQs, they'll come out with a high ceiling, but when you look at the actual execution on the current vehicle,
sure,
it doesn't always come close to hitting the ceiling. But with these, my question is, does this seem like a more realistic based on past requirements?
Yeah, and I think from my recollection, I was actually at GSA at the time. The $50 billion open procurement and the $15 billion small business were perceived probably as stretch goals at the time. But I think looking at the market moving forward, there's a big focus on reducing unnecessary contract duplication. You've seen a pattern where Air Force and others have signed up for OASIS and made commitments to use that. I think Alliant, there's going to be a huge opportunity, and I don't think the numbers are exaggerated in terms of the ceiling. I think it's probably appropriate for the vehicle.
That was my gut instinct as well.
And I would say it's still a little bit high. I mean, the agency certainly wants to leave themselves some wiggle room.
Sure.
But we've identified it as a must-win for IT services companies just because of the scope that it offers and how important it's going to be with DHA's, the Defense Health Agency, agreeing to use it with many of their purchases. And a lot of this heavy usage government-wide should just continue on.
Yeah, also you see, from an OMB perspective, there's trends there where you talk about the greater scrutiny of business cases for standalone contracts, agency-specific contracts.
Right.
A lot of focus. If you read all the category management, pronouncements with regard to the management memos, you always see contract duplication and reducing it mentioned. I mean, the appropriate thing, obviously, is unnecessary contract duplication.
Right, right.
Some duplication is appropriate, or it's going to be there just because of unique agency missions, and you may have similar contracts.
Right.
But similar but different.
And right. And it's a way to keep, there's some risk reduction strategy there. There's some industrial base strategy there. But in this particular case, you're absolutely right. Those memos coming out of OMB, the ones that we were looking at not too long ago, and they keep pushing on this, is all the desktops, the laptops, all of that.
Right.
They're all over that. They know that they're not getting the best bang for their buck because of the duplication.
Yeah, and the memo essentially making Nessus Soup, CIOS, CS, I think, and Schedule 70 mandatory for all intents and purposes. It's kind of driving that. At the end of the day, though, from what the figures were, that's about a $1 billion market, though, annually, 1.2 or something like that. So I mean, you can make some change there, but that's not going to move the needle at the end of the day.
The commodities are a little bit easier to track, and maybe those could go through those vehicles easily. But as we've seen with the most recent memo, once we get into the software licenses and those type of arrangements, it may get a little bit more complex.
Right. Well, gentlemen, we've already come up on the first break. My guests today are Dan Snyder. He's a federal market analyst, and Cameron Luthy, a senior budget analyst, both with Bloomberg Government. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the next quarter, what we look for. You know, the fourth quarter of the year is always that big buying season. And, also, I think there's a lot of action on multiple board contracts, the placement of task orders. We talk a little bit about that. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Well, welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Dan Snyder. He's a federal market analyst, and Cameron Luthy, senior budget analyst, both from Bloomberg Government. And gentlemen, we took the break. I know we wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on in the fourth quarter this year, but I want to go back first to the top 20 list, Dan. And, I know if there are any specific procurements that pique your interest that are just, there's some changes to them or whatever. So I give you a chance to take a shot at that.
Certainly. And linking it back to our comments on ceiling values, I think there's two that have had some recent actions that are, I'd like to highlight. One is the Frederick National Laboratory for Cancer Research, which is a contract Leidos, formerly SAIC, has held for a very long time. But they increased the ceiling on that one to $18 billion. So I think they're giving themselves some additional room as well after the president has come out with this announcement. And we've also seen a lot of logistics work come out of SOCOM as they try to consolidate some of those services. And that one was recently increased. That one is Special Operations Forces for Global Logistics Support Services. And that one increased from, I think it was about $2 billion, and it's now at $8 billion. So.
Wow. Wow, and that's like when you think about what's going on in the world, right?
That there's a demand signal, right?
Yeah, ISIL and all that stuff out there. That makes a lot of sense. That's interesting, and those ones obviously you guys are tracking through your top 20 list and where they are. So you've come out with another feature, too, that I just found really fascinating, interesting, and this is... call it the source selection tracker. What is that?
Yes. Thank you for bringing it up. It's a tool that we recently released probably 2 months ago, and it was based on the activity that we've seen in the past fiscal year. I think Bob Lohfeld, who's participated in the coalition and been on Federal News Radio, referred to this as the peak GWAC or MAC season. And the basis behind that was how cyclical it is with the recompetes that are occurring on this basis. So going along those guidelines, we had already tracked all of these on the top 20, so we converted them over to what we are referring to as a source selection tracker, which in a consolidated source represents how expeditiously these agencies are able to get to an award. For instance, PAX has been sitting idle for quite some time, and many.
What is PAX for?
It's a large MAC at Department of Homeland Security, and it's Program Management, Administrative, Clerical, and Technical Services. So that's
a mouthful. No wonder you call it PAX.
Look, Roger, we both worked in the government. We know that there's this great love affair with acronyms.
I think it's an obsession. I don't think it's a love affair.
So, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, that one's at $1.5 billion. So, but some of the other ones, they consolidated four multiple award contracts at Army and lumped that into RS3. Which is Responsive Strategic Sourcing for Services, which is a $37.4 billion MAC that will soon be awarded at the Department of Army.
$37.4,
correct.
Yeah, so I guess GSA is not the only one with some big numbers out there, right?
and that's slated for Q1 of 2017, right?
For award, I believe.
Right, for making the award.
Well, they pushed it back, I think, three or four times. So they're still ironing out some of the details there. But We discussed Oasis in the first part of the show and how that will handle a lot of professional services requirements throughout civilian agencies. And RS3 should certainly handle a lot of those professional services over at DOD.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have to ask you about one that's, I think, Encore 3, and, you know, where that is in the, is, you know, and we, you know, the big issue with that one that has been in the press a lot is the fact that it was LPTA. I just wondered if, you know, what you're seeing in regard to that particular procurement.
Yeah, there's certainly been a reasonable degree of lashback regarding the decision to go LPTA, but as they have continually reminded us, it is in the FAR to do it LPTA, so they're sticking with it.
DISA being the customer here.
Correct, but we've written on it extensively in, at Bloomberg Government, and a lot of our analysis find that a lot of the high-margin work that was on Encore 2 is going to be converted to vehicles like Alliant that we also discussed, and they might be shooting themselves in the foot to restrict the low-margin work that's left over on Encore 3.
Yeah, well, this is one of the major observations about Encore 3 that I've heard out there is that it's going to drive a lot of the more sophisticated, complex work that was done under Encore 2 to other contract vehicles, because the customers ultimately is looking for best value mission support.
Yeah, when I was at Booz Allen, one of my colleagues called it the drag stuff to it phenomenon. You drag stuff to the vehicle that's both beneficial to the vendor and the customer.
Right, right. Absolutely. So now let's talk a little bit about the fourth quarter of this fiscal year and what's going on there. What does that look like from your perspective?
So if we look at it historically, we've seen a lot of major IT services opportunities come up for recompete in quarter two. CIO SP3 had their $20 billion small business on-ramp. We had others like an Army vehicle, ITES 3S. And then as we transitioned to Q3, a lot of those now are converting and wrapping up a lot of the professional services, like we discussed at SOCOM with those logistics contracts. And as we transition to quarter four, we certainly have a lot of those same opportunities that will hang over. But it will be interesting to see how the government is able to balance some of the requirements that they'll have to do for these competitions, along with getting all of their purchasing in for fourth quarter. So many of the contracts that we've seen leveraged in the fourth quarter are the multiple award contracts. So your IT-70s, your NASA SUPs, HHS's CIO SP3 should certainly house many of these requirements in fourth quarter. So contractors should be ready to fulfill those requirements at the order level.
And you know, because they're so important, there's sort of this primacy to get things done, right? And
exactly.
And yet, as you pointed out, Dan, there's the contract shops are under tremendous strain already, and it will get worse before it gets better. And so then there's the risk that some of the lower priority vehicles potentially could slip. I think that's part of what you're...
So a prime example of the hypothetical that Cameron set up right there is with
GSA. Yeah, I just threw you under the bus.
IT-70, they're putting out this big special item number, or SIN, which will primarily help Defense Health Agency with their health IT purchasing. And they've said that a draft RFP will be coming in June with a final RFP by the end of fourth quarter. And then, of course, it's a rolling admission, so there's shouldn't be too much length in time when they're able to turn it around for award. But at the same time, they're going to have to balance all of these incoming. I mean, it's a $15 billion vehicle already. So the extent to which the agency is able to ramp up those administrative resources remains to be seen.
Yeah, and the big question there is, like, how is it actually going to be implemented by GSA? You know, your point about putting it out as a draft and then, and then ultimately amending the RFP to add that new SIN, and how they do it. Is it going to be a, you know, streamlined process for companies who already have, you know, the stuff on their contracts to be able to identify it or list it under that SIN? you know, how much work are they going to have to do? And then obviously
to move over from
to move it to be able to, you know, kind of be a cut and paste approach in a certain sense, because it's already been negotiated and priced and you're putting it under a SIN because it does lend itself to health IT. That's some of the key things, especially if they're trying to get it in place as quickly as possible so their customer can take advantage of it.
Yes. We've certainly seen, like you alluded to, with the ease of which contractors may want to get that SIN under their belt, and GSA rolled out the initiative making it easier. So along these same guidelines, I think it was specifically for these new vendors to allow them to add this in. But the large contractors currently on IT-70 may find it already convenient because they can just modify the existing contract.
Right. So we have to take our next break. My guests today are Dan Snyder. He's a federal market analyst, and Cameron Luthi, senior budget analyst, both from Bloomberg Government. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion, start talking a bit about that. It's an election year, right, Cameron? There's a lot of stuff going on, right?
Dang.
Yeah, so it means budget implications, all kinds of implications. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Dan Snyder. He's a federal market analyst for Bloomberg Government, and Cameron Luthi, senior budget analyst from Bloomberg Government. And this segment, Cameron, it's tag, you're it kind of a little bit more, because I want to talk about budget and what's going on there. And when we broke the segment, it's to state the obvious. It's an election year. There's a lot going on. We're talking potentially continuing resolutions, all that sort of thing, a lame duck Congress. Are they going to solve things or not? You know, what's going to happen moving forward? So I'm just going to step back and you can talk a little about where we are right now and what you may or may not expect to see moving forward.
Great, Roger. So I think you can sort of break this into two buckets. The first bucket would be wrapping up 2017 action for the budget. And the second budget is what happens next calendar year with the 2018 budget, with a new president and a new Congress. So in the first bucket, I think you're absolutely right. Everyone I've talked to expects that we will have a CR in September, no government shutdown, not in an election year. There's a very obvious pattern to some of what's gone on with previous shutdowns politically.
Sure.
And the CR will go until after the November elections. They will come back in a lame duck session, and they will have to decide, can we reach agreement? They have caps. They know what the caps are. So it's not like they have to fight about the top line particularly, though, you know, some people in Congress want to reduce spending still, despite the agreement last year. But it is not without precedent. And we talked about this at CGP Spring Conference a little bit. In an election year, sometimes in the lame duck, they just kick the can down the road. Instead of wrapping things up by Christmas and having full year funding for all federal agencies, they may just kick the can down the road by extending the CR until March or April. Now, that's obviously not ideal for contractors. It's not ideal for the government. I just want to put that warning out there. From my standpoint, I'm still optimistic about a deal getting done by Christmas on fiscal 17 appropriations. And that would be consistent with the timing that we've seen in the last several years. And it isn't ideal, but the contracting community is used to it.
Right. So, you know, if the can, this is radio, we got to focus on the what if scenario that's not so great. But if we kick the can down the road to the next Congress, what is a realistic time frame? So, because you could have changes. I mean, you have a new president, obviously, and wanting to put their stamp on things. Then you have a new Congress, and you could have changes in leadership. I mean, you will have some changes in leadership regardless, right? No matter who, steps to the fore. Is it a situation where not that much changes for the first year, and they just agree the first year and then move on and people put their stamp on things for the next budget, or do could you conceivably see some people saying insisting on things and trying to put an immediate imprint on it? I mean, this is obviously crystal ball stuff, but that's what we're all about here.
That's right. And you know me, Roger, I've got an opinion on everything.
Yes, you do. Yes.
So I've been through, when I was in the federal government, two transitions, from Bush the elder to Clinton and from Clinton to Bush the younger. And so in both instances, you're talking about a change in political party. It's no one knows who's going to win in November, but I just put that out as context. So my view is that with most presidents, the budget for the year that they are coming into office, so in this case, fiscal 17, which is supposed to, it starts October 1,
right,
whether
right.
Congress gets done or not is a separate question.
Sure. Yeah.
That the incoming president has less interest in modifying whatever it has been agreed to or is close to an agreement before he or she takes office. They really want to put their stamp on their budget request for the following year. So you hit it right on the head. So whoever the new president is, they will want their fiscal 18 budget to be their imprint, that their policy priorities, their budget priorities, and typically, that budget is delayed to give the incoming president and their team time to put those priorities together and put the numbers together. So when Clinton came into office in 93, his budget was transmitted in April. And that's about average for a new president coming into office.
Okay. And then, there's also, there could be, well, on the Hill, depending on how the election goes, there may be a cooler reception. I mean, it's very.
Oh yeah,
that's interesting.
So when George W. Bush became president in 2001, when he took office, they followed that pattern I talked about, where they were mostly focused on the budget for the coming year. But they did do, because it was a change in political party, they did do a relatively small supplemental package to beef up spending for the current year.
Mm-hmm.
For defense, mostly. You may recall that when Bush was running for president, his advisors said that we need more money for defense, and he put his money where his mouth was once he got into office. Nobody, of course, at that time anticipated what was going to happen on September 11th, so changed everything. But yeah, so a new president could try to make changes on the margins to fiscal 17, but it's not going to be, I would seriously doubt that's where they would put their priorities. It would really be on the budget for the following year, for fiscal 18.
Okay. And I know there's, I mean, I wanted to ask you about this anyway, but there's a lot of talk on the Hill. There's proposals to provide additional funding for IT modernization. What is all that about? And what do you think the prospects for that is?
Well, The real problem is that it is when you go talk about budget in the last 8-9 years, really since 2011 for sure, it's a zero sum game. So if there's going to be more money for IT, where's it going to come from? How's it going to be paid for? So as you know, the budget caps that were set in 2011 with the Budget Control Act have been increased multiple times. A little bit here, a little bit there.
Right.
Living within the budget is difficult,
right.
But
no, they've lived within the budget. They just changed the budget number,
right? But to be fair to Congress and the White House, they found offsets to pay for the increases in discretionary spending, whether it's through fees or changes in mandatory programs. Very modest, but because they're so big, even a modest change can
have
save
impact.
You some money.
Yep.
So they've been pretty consistent about paying for the increases in discretionary spending, annual appropriations, which of course pay for hiring federal employees and of course federal contracting. And that's where that's why we care about the discretionary side so much.
Right. So when you look at the timeline that you laid out there, so really realistically talking about a president having an impact, and for FY18, really.
So
right?
October of next year.
Right. So that also kind of makes this interesting time frame here, because you'll have a lot of these contracts either in place at that point, I would think, or then there'll be people ready to execute depending on what the priorities are. across the board. So, I mean, to back to the point, you know, we sort of started with the show. This is a big, big, big time for these contract vehicles.
Certainly, and a lot of times these, throughout acquisition planning, they will meet delays. So many of the opportunities that we are tracking currently that are slotted for fourth quarter will naturally spill over to the next fiscal year.
Right. So they'll be hopefully put in place in time to execute on whatever the priorities are of whoever is the next president. Right. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, hey, you know what? We're already up at the last break. So we'll actually talk about 2017, the calendar year, and what that looks like from a procurement perspective when we come back. My guests today are Dan Snyder. He's a federal market analyst, and Cameron Luthi. He is a senior budget analyst. Both of these gentlemen are from Bloomberg Government, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Fed News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Fed News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Dan Snyder. He is a federal market analyst, and Cameron Luthi. He is a senior budget analyst. So both of these gentlemen are from Bloomberg Government. We've been talking about, you know, the federal market in terms of major multi-board IDIQ contracts, and primarily, I think, in the IT and professional services arena. Although, you know, Dan, you mentioned a couple logistics ones that are out there that are of great importance, both from a dollar perspective, but also from a strategic, you know, national defense mission perspective. And then also, Cameron, last segment was great, breaking down what people need to think about and how the timing of things are going to happen with regard to the next budget, whoever it wins. And, you know, that kind of time frame gives people sort of markers what they need to think about and be watching as they move forward. So this segment, I wanted to talk a little bit, Dan. You know, we are looking out into the future, and, you know, it's hard to believe we're already almost halfway through 2016, the calendar year, almost three quarters of the way through 2016, the budget year. Right, Cameron? Is that right?
Yes, sir.
I always get confused. I can't do my math on that. So what does 2017 sort of both fiscal year and calendar year look like for these multiple award contracts?
Thanks, Roger. So Bloomberg Government does track all of these opportunities weekly. So we're constantly replacing all of these as they hit an final RFP release. For example, just last week, a contract with the Missile Defense Agency, just short of $6 billion, came out. So we will be replacing that this week with a operations contract that NASA holds to handle operations at Johnson Space Center. So naturally, as we alluded to before the break, many of these do not meet their planned deadlines that agencies set forth to achieve.
Yeah, funny how that works too, right?
So, I mean, just to give a few specific examples.
I think the exception would be meeting their deadlines. That's just the nature of procurement, frankly. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, oftentimes they are pretty, I mean, not dead on, but we'll give them a quarter wiggle room. And usually they are pretty good for the most part, more than others.
Sometimes the delays are a response if they've had an RFI or an RFQ out or an industry day, and the feedback they get from industry can affect the timing of as well.
Right.
Without a doubt, yeah.
But well, I think the important thing from an industry perspective and a government communication perspective is being transparent about your timelines, because the more you let people know realistically what you're looking at, I think the better companies have an opportunity to plan, and also opportunity to save money. Because, you know, once you start putting a team in place and you have to maintain that team, and all of a sudden there's a delay and another delay, if you government are not communicating with industry about, you know, what's the realistic time frame, you know, that you know people don't know what to do, and, you know, they have to maintain these teams, and that costs money day in and day out, and they could be doing other things while that delay is taken to resolve whatever is going on. So,
and I think right now, more so than ever, we're seeing that be the case. There's a contract at Department of Homeland Security where they didn't cancel it but decided not to recompete. an $11 billion contract for professional services. So certainly those business case standards are being taken into consideration.
Now, is that where DHS is now going to use OASIS? Is that part of that?
OASIS, yes. Yeah. So that also goes back to why we think some of these on-ramps will occur sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think the on-ramps too in the area of small business, the small business side of things, because as companies become very, very successful on these contracts, you know, they've got to recertify at option periods.
Yep.
And if they can't recertify a small, you know, they're either off the contract, I guess, agencies do not get small business credit anymore, and that's the big kicker too. So so I think some of the on-ramps are going to be in response to ensuring that there's a robust small business market there.
Exactly. And we haven't heard any firm commitments, but we expect them to be occurring soon, yes.
Yeah. So, Cameron, now, when we're thinking about, you know, and you guys laid out, there's like, you know, the top 20, there are huge contracts. It's a big year for, and I say big year because we're talking between now and probably the next 12 to 18 months, there's all these big contracts are going to be put in place. So what are companies thinking about when they're looking at this from a, you know, competition perspective, bid and proposal cost perspective? What's the kind of thought process they go through?
Well, I think the key factor is how far out is the expected RFP. And if it's relatively soon, that leaves you very little time to do anything to enhance your position between now and when the RFP comes out. So if you haven't got your act together, it's too late, as you were alluding to earlier. As you start to go out, say, beyond 6 months to, you know, to closer to, you know, 12 months or beyond, now you're talking opportunities to shape the type of a contract vehicle that's used. You know, that LPTA question that you talked about earlier, you can, you know, terms and conditions, you can talk to the customer about maybe using an existing vehicle for part of the work so that they can get access to the high-end value proposition that they need for some of the work. And to your earlier point, that also can be time that can be used to say you want to team with somebody. You haven't worked with this client, this customer before. You can do an analysis. We have a partner finder feature on our website. Look at who's doing the work today. Is there something you could do in the meantime to team with them to develop some past performance, to better position yourself for being on a team to bid on that work that will come, say, a year from now. And that's to say nothing of the costs of when you've got delays of keeping your bid and proposal teams together, your capture team together, and all the costs associated where those people could be either doing client delivery or you could delay hiring. And, you know, that speaks also to strategic hires, right? So let's say it's a big opportunity coming up with NIH, for example. Do you have the expertise? Are there people retiring from the government that you could hire that would help you be better positioned for the work when it does come? Mergers, acquisitions, buying a small company that has some niche capability that could help enhance your ability to bid on that work a year from now. I mean, Dan's been watching, and we've all been watching, the high rate of mergers, acquisitions,
yeah.
And don't forget divestitures,
yeah.
Where companies are saying, we don't want to do this type of work anymore, we're going to sell it off.
Well, Kim, I think a good example, too, just recently, a lot of the comments that you discussed had to do with constraints that companies experience internally. But also, you can get out there and impact the acquisition planning. As we saw with the Next Generation Enterprise Network 2, which is a communications contract at Navy, it's been single award held by Hewlett-Packard Enterprises. And they just recently said that they're going to issue that multiple award. So that's going to create some additional opportunities that otherwise may not have existed for other companies. And going back to your mergers and acquisitions, many people may be aware they were just purchased by CSC. So it'll be interesting to see how the dynamics of this relationship pan out.
So we got about 30 seconds left. Do you have one final word to describe what's going on right now?
Do your homework.
Okay. Well, that's more than one word. Okay. Well, I want to thank my guest today, Dan Snyder. He's a federal market analyst, and Cameron Luthy, senior budget analyst from Bloomberg Government. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.